Okay, Nachem, you're there with us? I assume yes. Okay, so we're up to the Gemara, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. If you remember, let's sum up because we're going to bring this now to a complete close, this discussion that we've been involved with now for a week. So let's sum up. We have a Mishnah that tells us, Dinei Momonos B'Shloisha. The Mishnah then says, Gezelois v'chavolois b'shloisha. We're trying to work out what is this repeat. And basically, we have two approaches. In summary, we have two approaches. Approach number one is that you always need three dayonim min ha-Torah. The question is only whether you need mumchin or not. When it comes to gezelois v'chavolois, you need mumchin. When it comes to halvois, you don't need mumchin because we don't want to close the door on lenders of money. That is approach number one, and that's why the Mishnah splits it up into two, because there really are two different halachas. Approach number two is completely different. Approach number two is that actually, when it comes to halvois, min ha-Torah, you do not need three dayanim. You actually only need one dayan. How do we know? This is learned from the Psukim. Nonetheless, Chazal required three, nonetheless, out of concerns that we're worried that they might put somebody there who's not really up to scratch. He doesn't know the halachas well enough. If there's three, then it's probably safe to assume that out of the three, at least one of them will be a competent dayan. Which means, therefore, in the final analysis, that albeit that you always need three, but to be perfectly honest, it's not the same requirement. Because in Gezeilois v'Chavolois, it's a requirement min ha-Torah, whereas it comes to Halvois, it's only a requirement mid-Rabbonon. And that's why the Mishnah splits it up into two. And therefore, according to this, the reading of the Mishnah is as follows. Dinei Momonos b'shloisha, meaning Halvois, yes, you need three, but it's only mid-Rabbonon. Then the Mishnah carries on. Gezeilois v'chavolois need three. That really does need three. That's not a rabbinic institution. That is a halacha min ha-Torah. So we have two or three more lines from this sugya, and that brings it to a total close. If you look, it's the very first word on the line. Mai ikka. Mai ikka. My ikka bein rova l'rav acha breider of ikka. What is the difference between the two approaches? At the end of the day, everybody agrees that in every case you need three dayonim. It's true there's a discussion whether that's min ha-Torah or on occasion mid-Rabbanon, but is there any practical difference between the two? That's what the Gemara is asking. Again, when you read the Mishnah, what does the Mishnah says? This needs three, that needs three. We've got different approaches how to read the Mishnah. That's true. But in the final analysis, everybody agrees you always need three dayanim. So is there any practical difference between the different approaches? Says the Gemara, yes, there is. Ikka b'nayu. There is a difference between the two. The Omar Shmuel. Because Shmuel once said, Shnayim shedonu, comma, if there were only two dayanim on the bezdin, and they paskened a din, dinehen din, then their din is considered a din, at least b'di'eved. Two works b'di'eved, says Shmuel, Elo. Shenikru bezdin chotzuf, but they are called a bezdin chotzuf. Chotzuf from the lashon of chutzpah, meaning they are being disobedient because they never should have passed on the shaila with only two dayanim on board. So Shmuel is mechadesh, a tremendous chiddush that even though three are required, but b'di'evad if there were only two, then that would suffice. Says the Gemara, not everybody agrees to that. Why? Le Rava, Lesley de Shmuel. Rava does not hold of Shmuel. The Rav Acha b'Rei de Rav Ika is lay de Shmuel. Meaning, we said that both approaches in the Gemara, we always require three dayanim in the final analysis. One requires it min haTorah, and one requires it midrabbanon, but come what may, you've got to have three. So what's the difference? Says the Gemara, the difference is not lechatchila. Everybody agrees that lechatchila, you've got to have three. So there's not going to be any practical ramification, albeit that some hold you need three min haTorah and some hold you need three midrabbanon. But the bottom line is you need three. That's not going to be the difference. What will be the difference? The difference will be b'di'eved. Because Shmuel was mechadish, that if two dayanim, by the way, that's a big chiddush, because normally we say you can't have an even-numbered bezdin. This is the chiddush of Shmuel, that at least b'di'eved, if two dayanim pasken, then it will be okay, albeit we call them a bezdin chotzuf. Is that unanimously agreed upon? Says the Gemara, well, that will be the difference between the two approaches, because if you hold that you require three dayanim min haTorah, like Rava does, because he holds of the whole era of parashiyos and cut and paste story. So if you need three dayanim min haTorah, then there's no way that two can suffice, even b'di'evit. However, according to the second approach, that you never needed three dayanim in haTorah, it was just a takonas chazal to require three dayanim. So then we can appreciate Shmuel's psak, that if it was only a takonas chazal, the seder. But b'di'eved, if you only had two, that would suffice. Why would that suffice? Because min haTorah, you don't need three at all. Reb Larry.
Isn't two the same as three here? Because you need a rove if you have three. So if you have two dayanim that agree upon a psak halacha, the third guy becomes obsolete. So having two that agree on a particular direction is the same as having three.
It's not, because, a good question. Because even though numerically I'm going to end up with the same amount paskining in a particular direction, but they were never classified as a bezdin in the first place. So it's like if you have a bezdin of 71, so all I need is 36 saying innocent. No, so if I assemble 36 and I have 36 saying one, that, no, but that doesn't constitute a bezdin. That will be the difference. Have a look at Rashi. Rashi is on the fourth wide line. On the fourth wide line, Rashi says, L'rova, L'rova da'omar mid'oiraisa t'losa b'inon, comma. According to Rava, who says that you need three min haTorah, that's the word you should underline, midoy raisa. Rava holds of Iruv Parashios, cut and paste story. So according to Rava, you've got to have three dayanim. That's non-negotiable. Therefore, lesle de Shmuel. Well, then he can't possibly hold of Shmuel. Well, what did Shmuel say? The Omar, Dinei and Din. Shmuel said that their Din is a Din. If you only have two, that can't be. Whereas the other opinion who says it's just a problem of Bezdin Chotzuf. What does that mean? A brazen Chutzpedik Bezdin. She'ovru al Takonas Chacham. They were over the Takona of Chazal. Chazal said you should have three, and they only had two. Okay, that's true. That absolutely should not have been done. But at least for Dieved, it will suffice. And that is the end of the sugya. I just want to add one line. This is a principle that we have mentioned many, many, many times, not just in the forum of our shir, but you might remember that we've mentioned this in other forums as well. And this, I think, is a very, very important place to once again remind ourselves on this principle. We are now standing on Yud Gimel Cheshvan.
Dalet.
We're up to Yud Dalet ready? Up to Yud Dalet? Yud Dalet Cheshvan.
Yeah.
So we're Yud Dalet Cheshvan, coming up to the Chazon Ish Tzeit. We're Yud Dalet Cheshvan, which means we're 2 weeks into Zman. And if we were to look very cynically at what have we learned so far this Zman. We've spent the best part of 2 weeks just trying to translate the opening line of the Mishnah. Why so? Because the opening line of the Mishnah is very cryptic, very peculiar. Dine Momonos b'shloisha, gezeilos v'chavolos b'shloisha. So we've spent 2 weeks, a whole omad and a half, ear of parashios and a rover and a shmuel and a backwards and forwards, all trying to work out what did the Mishnah mean. So somebody might well come along and very cynically ask, well, what a shame that the Tanna and the Mishnah didn't add maybe just one or two words of explanation. We could have saved ourselves a lot of headache and we could have been up to Daf Hay by now. So why was the Mishnah written so cryptically that we have to sit for 2 weeks working out just what did the Mishnah mean? So even though we call this maybe a cynical question, but to be honest, it's a very important question because it's a question that bothers all of us. A lot of Gemaras are not so much necessarily dealing with working out a particular psak halacha. They're just trying to work out simple translation of the Mishnah, where a word or two on occasion would have sorted out the whole issue from the first place. So here comes the principle, and this is phenomenally important for us in our project of Limud Torah Be'iyun. Essentially, Torah Sheba'al Peh should have remained just that, Torah Sheba'al Peh. It should all be the oral law, it should not be of written, and everything would be handed down, the Maseiros, etc., etc., etc. As we know, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, he was the one who took upon himself. He based this on a pasuk, Eis la seis la shev. There's a time for everything. And he, with his great Ruach HaKodesh, was able to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted for the oral Torah to be written down as if it was Torah Shebichsav. And on that basis, he compiled all the Mishnayos. Obviously, this is a very brave and a phenomenally large decision, but Rebbe, Malach Aleikim, and he took upon his shoulders to do so. Therein lies a colossal problem. For all the help in the world that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi has achieved for us by writing down the Mishnayos, so of course it's a tremendous assistance, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did so because he was worried that Torah would be forgotten forever. But l'chaira, it's a double-edged sword. Why is it a double-edged sword? Because the whole beauty of Torah Sheba'al Peh is that it's got to be toiled. Omol HaTorah. One of the most famous Rashi's in Kol HaTorah Kula, Im B'chukosai Teilechu, says Rashi, She'tiyu Ameilim BaTorah. Not Limud Torah, but rather Omol HaTorah. And Chazal tell us that the entire connection that we have between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is specifically through the Omol HaTorah of Torah Sheba'al Peh. If somebody would take a chumash, put his feet up on the couch with a glass of champagne and read the chumash, even if he didn't understand a word you were saying, he would be yotzei of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. But that's not the way that you forge a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You forge a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how so? By toiling, even on occasion when it's difficult, in Torah Sheba'al Peh. If that's the case, Rebbe, really, on the one hand, has done us a tremendous chesed by writing down Torah Sheba'al Peh, because otherwise, chas v'shalom, it might have been forgotten. But that comes with a huge liability. What's the huge liability? That if you write down the Mishnayos and everything is crystal clear, well, where's my Omol HaTorah gone? There's nothing to be toiled if everything is spelled out black and white. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi had to make a very, very delicate, delicate decision. On the one hand, he's going to write down Torah Sheba'al Peh. But on the other hand, it's going to be written on occasion in a cryptic way so that toil, Omol HaTorah, will always be necessary. So what Klal Yisrael required was something very, very, a very delicate balance. On the one hand, they required Torah Sheba'al Peh to be written down, But on the other hand, not to have Omol HaTorah taken away from them. And if everything is just laid out for us crystal clear, yes, if the Mishnah would have added two or three words, then it's true. 2 weeks of discussion would have been unnecessary. If the Mishnah would have written, Dine Halvois Beshloisha Midrabonon, and Gezelois Vechavolois Beshloisha Min HaTorah, well, that's discussion over. So about three extra words would have alleviated all necessity to have a daf and a half of Gemara that we've just finished learning. That's true, but then we would have lost Omol HaTorah, and with it, our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You may well ask, so why indeed is our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu only through Omol HaTorah? And the simplest answer is, just like in any relationship, imagine a chassan and kala get married. When the going is tough, as they say, the tough get going. Meaning, when everything is very easy and plain sailing, there the love between husband and wife is not evident, because everything is easy. What happens when Mesiras Nefesh is required from the husband to the wife, or the wife to the husband, or from one friend to another? That's when true Ahava is evident. When I see how much effort the other party is prepared to put in, that's truly a sign of how important this is to him. But when everything is just plain sailing and everything is easy, then it's true, it's a very enjoyable experience, but you don't see the love because you don't see the willingness of the other party to put in effort. And exactly the same is true with us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If everything were to be easy, if all the Mishnayos were to be written in a crystal clear fashion, yes, learning Torah will be much easier. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not see that we are willing and excited to put in effort to demonstrate how important Torah is. And that, therefore, is our endless Hakaras HaTov to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, on the one hand, allowed us to learn Torah Sheba'al Peh, and ensured it would not be forgotten. But on the other hand, he ensured that Omol HaTorah would always be required. Yes, you're going to have to sit for a week and a half working out what does it mean, Dine Momonis Beshloisha. I could have added one or two words, says Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and the whole discussion would have been resolved. But then you would have lost your Omol HaTorah. Then you would have lost your connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The whole reason why we learn Torah is in order to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this really answers the most basic of all questions. And I know we're veering off, but this is so critical from time to time, just to appreciate. We really have to stop and ask ourselves, do we have the clear answer to the most important question of all, which is, why do we need to learn Torah? Why do we need to learn Torah? Unfortunately, I've met many, 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 many people, including those who are in the Beis HaMedrash all day for a number of years, who do not have a clear answer to this question. And there is nothing more depressing being involved in a project where, to be perfectly honest, you don't quite understand why you're engaged in this project in the first place. Rather than, as they say in Ivrit, Lama Kacha. Why Z? Because. That's not a very enjoyable project. So all types of fancy schmancy answers are given. But the true solitary answer is we learn Torah in order to be able to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's as simple as that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in this world is, as it were, manifest in the Torah. By connecting to the Torah, we are connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why I think we all know the drasha, Torah tziva lanu moirasha. And what do Chazal say? Don't read it as moirasha, but as moirasa, betrothed. We learn Torah, we're becoming betrothed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah and Har Sinai was suspended above the heads of Klal Yisrael, some say that that is like a chuppah. Just like a chuppah, chasan and kala are married underneath a covering, Har Sinai was the chuppah for Klal Yisrael. When my son got married now in the summer, I told him, have a look at this particular Rishon, the Tashbetz, who discusses all the various minhogim and customs that we perform under a chuppah, and he relates every single one of them back to Matan Torah, including breaking the glass under the chuppah was like breaking the veluches by Moshe Rabbeinu. And many, many other. By the way, if you ever look at a ksuba, does anybody know offhand? What is the first letter of the ksuba?
It's a beis, isn't it?
Beis.
Beis. It's a beis. And of course, the first letter of the Torah is also a beis, Bereishis. And many, 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 many other references. Al Koponim, this is not just word games. Rather, this is in essence, is truth. Because when we learn Torah, that is, as it were, chosn and kala. It's no coincidence, by the way, that when we finish the Torah, the one who gets the last aliyah is called the chosn Torah. That's really what he is. He's a chosn.
I always have a problem. I always have a problem at a chuppah where when the chassan breaks the glass, everyone yells mazel tov, even though it's a zecher lechorban.
Right, right. It's a bit of an unfortunate thing. Now, every time you hear a glass break, everyone says mazel tov. Yeah, we've lost the effect.
Is this a remez to the way Hashem runs the world in your life in general? Because it always feels like there's a word or two missing from the pshat of your life. And you're in omo all the time trying to figure out what exactly is going on. Should I do this? Should I do that? How do I make my life
very, very good. So
and at the end of the day, what's really happening is Hashem is bringing you closer in your svara to try to figure out. It's Gemara logic. Your whole life is Gemara
logic. You're 100% right. We're veering off. But the planet that we live in is called Olam. Olam. Olam hazeh. Olam is from the same word as lehit alem. Alem means hidden. You're right. Sometimes, exactly the same as in a sugya, we sometimes wish, oh, chaval, if only the Mishnah would have added a couple of words. So too, we look at life sometimes as well. I've got this major decision, or something happens, I don't quite understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from me. If only there would be a divine bas kol min hashamayim. All I need is a brief email from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hi, Reb Larry, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking to you. I want you to do it. Ah, so life would be so simple. It would be. But if you do that, then we have no more Bechira. You know, we sometimes think to ourselves, wouldn't it be a tremendous Kiddush Hashem if some irreligious Jew who knows better and deliberately goes into his car and provocatively drives on Shabbos afternoon in a Haredi neighborhood, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if a bolt of lightning would just emerge from the sky and he would be zapped on the spot? And the answer is, it may well be a Kiddush Hashem, but then you've lost all Bechir. Nobody after that chooses to keep Shabbos, because it's so overwhelmingly clear what happens if you don't, that it's no longer a choice. And if you don't choose good, then you can't earn Olam Haba. So you're quite right. The world is, as it were, a sugya. And that's really our job in the world, piecing the puzzles, putting the pieces together. Things are not always clear, and we're trying our best to make it work. But if everything will be crystal clear, then yes, life would be much easier, but it would be far less rewarding. And that's exactly the same in the Gemara as well. Of course, if the Mishnah would have written Dine Mamanas Bishloisha or Dine Halvois Bishloisha and Dine Gzeles Vachavolois Bishloisha Minatera, then it would be much easier sugya. But then we've just lost our Omar HaTorah. So really, every day when we log on at 8:45 in the morning, we have to realize, what are we embarking on? We're embarking on a project of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the reason why this is possible is precisely because it's on occasion difficult and it requires omor. And that's why if somebody's only daily learning is what we call bekius, like an Omid Yomi or a Dafayomi program, then he's missing out on this. If it's an addition to the type of limud that we are involved with, fine, wonderful. If somebody's able to keep up and remember it, ma tov. But if that's your only limud for the day, just turning pages, without getting a chance to breathe, to really try and understand every Rashi, then you're losing out on Omol HaTorah. Yes, maybe it's more fun, and you cover ground quicker, and you have siyumim more often, it's true. But you're losing out on your connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Like we said before. Because precisely when it's difficult, and you've got to put in effort, that is most evident. Then the relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is most manifest. The fact that we're willing and able and excited to put in effort. So I don't think anything I just said was a chiddush to anybody, but these yesodos are yesodos that every so often we just need to remind ourselves. Otherwise, chas v'shalom, we can be involved in a project every day of limud Torah and not realize what's going on. It's like a chosn who's married to a kala and doesn't realize he's married. What a tragedy. Okay, back into our Gemara. Says the Gemara, Nezek, by the way, you will have noticed, we haven't really learned the Tosasim so far, even though we do like to learn Tosasim in our limud together, but the Tosasim thus far have pretty much in the main be our Tosasim that veer off into other sugyas, and we like to concentrate on the sugyas, on the Tosasim that are sugya based. So for sure, Tosasim coming up, there'll be more sugya based, we will learn them in Mitzvah. Says the Gemara, Nezek v'chatzi Nezek. So if you look back, go back to the opening Mishnah of the Perek. You'll remember that we said at the time we don't want to learn the entire Mishnah. Each part of the Mishnah, as we learn the relevant Gemara, will go back into the Mishnah. So the Mishnah over here, on the second line, says, Nezek v'chatzi Nezek, Tashlumei Kefel, V'tashlumei arba'a v'chamisha b'shleisha. Now, what is that referring to? So obviously we all know. Nezek is regular, normal damage. Chatzi nezek is when you have a shoir who has gored only once or twice, so he only pays half. Tashlumei kefel is when somebody steals from somebody else, he denies having stolen it, and then it turns out that the stolen item is still with him, he's got to pay twice. And arba'a v'chamisha, what's four and five? That is if you steal either a sheep or a cow. And not only do you steal it, but you then go and shecht it and sell it. So then there's a penalty payment. You've got to pay four times the amount or five times the amount, depending on what type of animal it is. And all of those halacha, what does the Gemara say? Bishleisha, they require three dayonim. Now, we have just come off the back of the line that said, Gezelois v'chavolois is b'shloisha. What's chavolois? Chavolois is injury, damage. So what exactly is the Mishnah then adding in the next line by saying nezek? Yeah. Nezek is damage. That is the Gemara's question. Says the Gemara, nezek, hainu chavolois, question mark. Nezek is... Look at Rashi. Rashi explains the question. Hainu nezek, hainu chavoloi, says Rashi. On the sixth wide line. Mai kori nezek, umai kori chavolis. What is it that you're calling nezek? What is it that you're calling chavolis? Surely it's all the same thing. Hon nezek. Echod mechamisha dvarim shel chavolois hu. We all remember from Parashas Mishpatim that when somebody injures somebody else, how many different types of payments are there? Five different types of payments, of which one of them is called nezek. You remember the Pesukim discuss, and we'll probably come back to this later on in the Masechta, it's not just damage you've got to pay for. You've also got to pay for how much money, for example, he lost out in medical fees. You've also got to pay for how much he lost out by missing work time. You've also got to pay for the busha, for the embarrassment. There's all different types of payments, but one of them is called nezek. That's the actual injury caused. So when you say chavolois, that is an all-encompassing word that includes all five types of payments, of which one of them is nezek. So why on earth would you need to say chavolos and in the next line nezek? I mean, that's the same thing. As Rashi says, the lisni chavolos, quote unquote, just state the word chavolos, and then veloi boi nezek, quote unquote. Well, then you wouldn't need the word nezek because nezek has already been incorporated in the word chavolos. Back into the Gemara again. Nezek, hainu, chavolos, question mark. Surely it's all the same thing. Why are you telling me the same principle twice? The answer is, mishum de koboi lemisna chatsi nezek. Because the Mishnah wanted to state for me chatsi nezek. Now, chatsi nezek clearly is not included in the principle of chavolos. Chatsi nezek is a very, very specific scenario of one ox goring another, either for the first or the second time. That's not incorporated in chavolis. So once the Mishnah wanted to state the halacha of chatsi nezek, toni nama nezek shalem. So then that's why it also stated nezek shalem. We have a principle of symmetry very often in the Mishnah. But the Mishnah tells you both halves of the coin. You're right. Nezek is incorporated in chavolis. But chatsi nezek is not incorporated in chavolis. One moment. Why is chatsi nezek not incorporated in chavolis? Surely chatsi nezek is also a branch of the same tree. It's a type of chavolis. And that's the Gemara's next question. How can you tell me that the main chiddush of the Mishnah is chatsi nezek? And it's only for purposes of symmetry that once you tell me chatsi nezek, then you tell me nezek shalem. Excuse me, chatsi nezek is also not a chiddush. Why? Says the Gemara, chatsi nezek nami, underline, hainu chavolois. Surely chatsi nezek is also subsumed in the general category of chavolois. So we haven't really answered the question at all. Look at Rashi. Chatsi nezek hainu chavolois. De shoir tam. Tam means not a shoir muad. From number time three and onwards, but rather for the first or the second time, a shoyer tam shechoval, who commits a damage, einoi meshalem elo chatsi nezek. So it's a type of chavolos. The kiven the ton of chavolos af chatsi nezek b'mashma. So once you state chavolos, then chatsi nezek is also incorporated. So basically, you haven't really answered the question. Why are you telling me that the main chiddush is chatsi nezek? And only for purposes of symmetry do you incorporate nezek shalem as well. But to be perfectly honest, chatsi nezek is also incorporated by chavolos. And therefore, that's not a chiddush. So we're going to have to see the teretz of the Gemara, which we'll leave for tomorrow. However, let's just make a very, very brief introduction in the couple of moments that we have left. We have two different types of monetary payments. There could be several examples, but there's two types. One is called momoin, and one is called knas, a penalty. So everybody understands, if I break somebody's window and it costs $100 to fix, so I've got to pay the $100. That's not a penalty fee. That's momon. That is the real financial chiyuv that you have to pay. On the other hand, when the Torah says, for example, that if you steal something, you've got to pay double, or on occasion, four or five times the amount, then everybody understands that that's not momon. That's a penalty. I only inflicted damage of what we call the keren, the initial capital. The fact that I have to pay 400 or 500%, that doesn't in any way relate to the amount of money that I actually owe him. The answer is, you're right, it's not called momoin, It's called knas. It's called knas. So here comes the big question. This we have to leave off with. The shor tam. He's galled only for the first or second time, where he's got this strange sounding halacha that he does pay, but he only pays half. Is that momoim or is that a knas? Do we say, well, it must be a knas? Were it to be momoim, and then you've got to pay 100%. It's either all or nothing. Or perhaps not. That's going to be our discussion. Be'ezus Hashem, we'll see this together tomorrow, all being well.
It's good.
Yeah.